Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
We are staying with the theme of the child immigrant experience. Kids are vulnerable and perhaps maybe never more so than when they migrate unaccompanied. Ideas we discussed with artist Maria Berrio in her exhibit, The Children's Crusade, just before we took a quick break. So let's turn our eyes now here to the Commonwealth. We welcome unaccompanied minors here, and we wanted to know how many, and how are our communities keeping kids safe? So Zan Weber is the Chief Advancement Officer at the International Institute of New England, which works in refugee resettlement, including with unaccompanied kids. Zan, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be with you today.
So I know you heard our conversation with Maria Berrio, and I'm struck again by this idea that she took a picture of safe, secure, joyful childhood play in the Boston Common on the Frog Pond Carousel, and turned it into a metaphor for a sense of being lost and stuck in a kind of rotation of, I don't know the word, maybe you do, but I'd love your reaction to that as someone who is working, and as I understand it, the International Institute is largely working with kids coming across from the southern border. So yes. Let's react to that work.
Yes, thank you. That's right. I spoke with Maria a little bit before her presentation, and then with her presentation, I'm just so awed and excited to be able to be a part of talking through children's experience through the lens of Maria's experience. And it is so challenging to be able to understand, contemplate, truly understand children's experience as they're crossing the border into the U.S. And we've been in this work, the International Institute, for over 10 years, and it's still unfathomable in many ways. So to be able to hear about an experience and experience it not through words, but through images and a different creative way to express it, I think is truly inspiring, and I'm really looking forward to the show.
So, Zan, let's make this real for listeners whose lived experience may be very, very far from what we're talking about. In working with kids, especially those who have come unaccompanied across the southern border, in learning about their experiences, tell me a moment, an experience a kid had, something you were told where you were like, God, I didn't know, right? I didn't know this is what a kid is going through.
Wow, that is hard to pick just one. Again, we've been working in this work. I'm a social worker working in the work for 10 years now. And we serve about 300 kids a year. And this year, our program has expanded. So we're probably going to see over 900 to 1,000 children. And I can talk about that.
That's more than three times.
It is. And there's many different reasons for the expansion of the program, which I can talk about. But it's hard to pinpoint one story that is either more impressionable or more challenging to hear or to understand.
And I don't need you to pick a winner. I just need you to pick one that will, you know, for our listeners, help them understand.
Yeah. So one that just comes to mind is that, you know, there several children are fleeing. Mostly this is, you know, we work with children from the Northern Triangle, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. And there's many complex reasons for their forced migration to the U.S. But, you know, when I've heard, and I work with our social workers, a couple of stories about how challenging it is for girl migrants in these experiences and how vulnerable they are to sexual violence in their communities, which is a part of the reason some of them are leaving, and then across the journey, and how challenging it is to avoid gang recruitment and the immediacy of like having somebody threaten you and you really literally having to think about leaving the next day because maybe you're going to end up raped and then in a plastic bag. Mm. And that is truly what I've, you know, heard that some of the children in our program have been threatened by.
So I'll flag for listeners, when we talk about vulnerable children, we are going to talk about troubling content, and we're not going to shy away from that for the rest of this segment. So listeners, beware. It's interesting that you say that. Part of what made us want to ask this question, are we taking unaccompanied minors in the Commonwealth? How do we do that? Do we keep them safe? Comes from some reporting that came out of the UK beginning late last year. I'm going to play a little sound. A BBC investigation found that the British government was housing unaccompanied minors in hotels, basically on their own, and a number of kids were disappearing from the hotels, and the size of that was pretty shocking. Here's some sound for you.
116 children are missing and not been found. So the consequences of that are huge. I mean, if we don't know where they are, they could be dead. They could be working away in a cannabis farm, in a factory, domestic servitude. They could be being criminally exploited or sexually exploited behind closed doors, and nobody knows what's happening to them.
So the kids coming here, are they safe and how are we keeping them safe?
Yes, that's such a great question. And I'm really, again, just so glad we're taking a look at this. The U.S. government has a very longstanding commitment and obligation to children who cross the border unaccompanied. As soon as they cross, they're in the care of Homeland Security and the custody and care of the U.S. government and the Office of Refugee Resettlement. From that crossing and that initial detention, they move into a shelter program, and that can be anywhere in the country. From the shelter program, the U.S. government works very hard to find the families children are coming to connect to. So most children crossing unaccompanied are coming to join.
Are coming to someone?
Yes, they're come. This is the pull factor. And they're often their, you know, family members, often their parents, if not a family member, then a close friend. In the shelter program, they're given a little bit of support, some mental health treatment, physical health treatment, and then this connection in search in the communities to try to find their a sponsor or their family. When they come into our area, and we work across New England and now in New York, we help reunify a child with their sponsor or their family. So we're meeting the child as soon as they travel to the Commonwealth, and then engaging them in services that are both designed to support their early integration, to get them connected to legal services, because unfortunately, as soon as they enter, they're in, you know, what is a deportation process. Basically, they've got to fight for their legal status. We try to connect in the mental health services. That is very challenging. And we're basically just there to be an advocate for every child as they're reunifying.
So that the piece of that really helpful for, you know, the idea of sort of safety and care is this, that there's this suite of services. And I've read in some places sort of similar to how we would do foster care for kids. So bear with me.
Sure.
Who is caring for the child?
Yes.
Who knows that the kid had a bad day? Who knows if they have a cough or a fever? Who is caring for the child?
So I'm happy to say in most instances, we are reunifying children with their parents, and their parents are wonderfully grateful to see their children again and are so excited to be able to provide them care.
So for the 300 that came, yes, that IINE helped with last year, the majority of them had parents here in the and is that because that's how it usually works, or is that because that's the kind of cases that Immigration International Institute is taking?
No, that is typical of what pulls children unaccompanied to the U.S.
Okay.
They have family that have come before. They have been threatened by poverty, crushing hunger, violence in their own country, and they're coming to join their family. They're not coming here to go into our foster care system to wander the streets. They're here really to help reconnect with their family. Their families may have, you know, supported their journey here because they're so desperate. They want to get as many people here into safety as possible.
So you connect them with the family.
Yes.
You connect them with services.
Yeah.
That's the vast majority.
Yes.
What about the kids where that's not the case?
So fortunately, so this the our program historically for the last 10 years had only been available to about 20% of children crossing the border and apprehended and in federal custody. The other 80% were what we call straight released into their communities without any formal support.
I don't know what you mean by into their communities. Do you mean into the city or town they came into across the border, or do you?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. Reunify with their families in communities across the country.
Okay.
So the majority of children had no formal support. Just last year, the Biden administration opened up a program like ours, and we're one of many different types of programs across the U.S. that works with family reunification to every child. So now 100% of children in federal shelter and custody, when they reunify, are offered support services.
These supports and services.
Yes.
And I should note, we are talking to Zan Weber, who's the Chief Advancement Officer at the International Institute of New England. So is there anything that we do, and the answer might, to this might be no.
Yep.
Is there anything that we do in the Commonwealth that is unique or distinctive? So, for example, we know that in family housing, right, we are unique in the Commonwealth in that if a family is homeless and has a child under the age of 18 or there is a pregnant person, yep, then we have an obligation to house. Is there anything with kids that's different here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, when we first started the program, there were about, I think, well, in 2015, 28,000 kids crossing. Last year was 128,000. 2,700 came to Massachusetts. So we have children, we have thousands and thousands of children across the Commonwealth who are integrating into our communities. Fortunately, we have, a broader safety net than some other states. Undocumented communities, families, children are not offered the same amount of support than people with legal status, which is really, really, really unfortunate. But we do have limited mental health services, limited mass health, comprehensive physical health services. Our public schools are some of the greatest partners in our work and have years and years of experience working with unaccompanied children, have some support programs available to them, some therapists. By and large, there is not enough formal clinical therapy and therapeutic work for children in this population, but we do have partners, and the Commonwealth as a whole has been able to sort of offer more support than other states.
All right. Zan Weber is the Chief Advancement Officer at the International Institute of New England, talking with us about how we welcome and care for unaccompanied minors who come into the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.